Good morning. This morning, we hear the case of the United States against Forney. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, may it please the court. Before I begin, I won't turn around, but I will hope that my comments can be translated for the court's visitors. Let me say that on behalf of the court's bar, at least that part of it for which perhaps I can speak, I am very pleased that representatives of the Iraqi military judiciary are present and taking advantage of the opportunity to observe the administration of justice in this room. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
You may have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
The sole charge that remains in this case is a violation of Article 133, which is conduct unbecoming. And as I begin, I would like to refer the court to the charge sheet, which appears on page 9. The specification to the charge recites that Lieutenant J.G. Forney, USS David Ray on active duty, did on board the David Ray on or about November 1999 through March 2000, wrongfully receive and possess child pornography as defined in 18 U.S.C. 2256, which acts or conduct constituted conduct unbecoming an officer and gentleman.
Well, what offense was he charged with there? It doesn't appear he was charged with a 2256 offense. He was charged with the 133 offense.
He was charged with obviously a 133, but the 133 was stated by the pleader with particular reference to Section 2256. Those words cannot be presumed to have been surplusage.
So are you arguing that the theory of the charge was not 133, but was rather the other offense?
Oh, it's a 133, but when...
So the answer is yes to that question, or...?
Yes, with an explanation. It's obviously a 133, but the pleader elected to cast the specification with particular reference to Section 2256, and indeed that is the basis on which the case was tried. This is a not guilty plea case, and that is the basis on which the military judge instructed the members, and that is the basis on which presumably, in fact, I think that's a conclusive presumption, the members must be deemed to have considered the evidence.
But in the earlier cases where we've dealt with this issue, the defendant has been charged with an offense under the CPPA. In this case, there is a reference to a definition in the CPPA. Do you see that as a difference at all?
I may have missed the first clause of the first horn of the dilemma that I sense.
Earlier cases where this court has discussed this area, the defendant has been charged with a violation of the CPPA. In this case, what they have done is they have made a reference to a definition that was contained in the CPPA. Now, in your mind, is that a critical difference or it makes no difference?
Well, you have to catalog the cases to distinguish between cases that are in the Article 134 part of the forest and cases like this that are in the Article 133 part of the forest. Now, Article 133 is a unitary article. And yes, they're both considered in the nature of general articles, but they're not the same thing. The military pleading, as we all know, has let's say, tended to assimilate them. But at the end of the day, Congress covered different kinds of activity under 133 from what was covered under 134. Did they overlap? Of course they do. But in this case, it's an officer case, there were 134 charges as well. But the only thing that remains on the table is a 133.
What's the issue, counsel? Is this the instructional error? Is that why you're here?
Well, the issue is without the instructional error, we would not be.
Put your arguments on the table. Let's hear them.
I'm sorry.
What do you want us to decide here?
Well, I think what you have to decide is the finding of guilty, whether the finding of guilty can stand in these circumstances. What has happened is.
But what's the circumstances? What's the issue?
The issue is this case was tried and went to the jury on the basis of definitions which are central to the matter. At least the pleader thought so, and everybody else in the courtroom thought so, that turn out to have a constitutional defect under
this is the actual virtual issue.
Of course.
Okay. So do we test the, if we assume that there's been an instructional error that was sent to the jury, do we test that for harmlessness?
Harmlessness beyond a reasonable doubt because it's
okay.
A constitutional
okay, so we tested for harmlessness beyond a reasonable doubt. In the theory, the doubt would come from what? Why would there be doubt? Would it matter if this was virtual in a 133 context?
Well, the pleader thought it was important to work with the definitions, and we have to... You litigate cases with the case you have, to paraphrase Secretary Rumsfeld. And this is a case that presents itself, at the end of the day, in terms of Section 2256. Now, the reason I thought it was important to refer the court to the exact language of the specification is that in addition to the reference to Section 2256, which we think is a fatal difficulty in a not guilty plea case, the pleader used the word wrongfully. That is right in there. And if the court will refer to pages 19 and 20 of the joint appendix, you'll see the instructions that the military judge provided. And the, fourth item in the military judge's summary on page 19 was that the accused receipt and possession of the child pornography was wrongful. And then turning to the very next page, the military judge elaborated on this and said, an act is wrongful if done without legal justification or excuse. Receipt and possession of child pornography may be inferred to be wrongful in the absence of evidence to the contrary. However, the drawing of this inference is not required. And what that tells me is there is no conclusive presumption in this case on these instructions that the material at issue, the images at issue, that their possession and receipt was wrongful. Was it an inference that could be drawn under these instructions? Yes, that's what the instruction said. But the instruction says it's not required. And what that means is it was open to the members to make a decision as to whether it was wrongful in the circumstances. And one of the points that one would have liked to have made if one had been given fair notice of what was going on here was that there was a constitutional difficulty in the definition.
Can you give us examples of virtual child pornography that would be rightful or becoming an officer to possess?
I think that you could make a colorable argument that virtual images were not unconstitutional. Were not constitutional.
That wasn't my question. My question was, can you give me a specific example of virtual pornography, child pornography, that would be becoming or rightful for an officer to possess?
Your Honor, I don't believe I have to give an example for that.
Can choose not to answer the question, but that's done at your own peril.
Well, the The burden rests at all times on the government to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, and the government has a burden.
I'm not the prior of fact. I'm trying to get at what the legal issue is here that you're trying to argue. And so I guess the answer is no to that.
I believe that it is open at all times to attempt to persuade the members that the possession of some kinds of images is protected by the United States Constitution.
Right. If you were making that argument, what would you say to the panel then? How would you persuade them that it is appropriate for an officer on board a vessel on a government computer to obtain constitutionally protected child pornography?
All I have to say is the Supreme Court of the United States has determined that virtual images are the possession and receipt is a protected activity.
And if they decided that possession and receipt is always becoming of an officer, or just that it might be constitutionally protected for a civilian?
Your Honor, I'm afraid I have to quarrel with your framing of the question, because the answer is I don't have to demonstrate that. The government has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it is harmless.
Counsel?
And I do not believe that it's my burden to carry the government's burden or to negate the government's burden.
Counsel, just to make sure that I understand your position, you're not arguing that the trier of fact would find that possession of virtual child pornography was becoming an officer. Is your argument that a trier of fact might be persuaded by the fact that some child pornography, virtual images of child pornography, have been deemed constitutionally protected by the United States Supreme Court, that it might not rise to the level of conduct unbecoming an officer?
That's exactly my argument, Your Honor.
Well, then I want to return to my question. Can you please describe what would fall within that delta? That's all I'm asking.
What is
an example of something that is constitutionally protected, virtual child pornography, that is not unbecoming an officer to possess? What's that delta? That's all I'm asking for an example.
I can't think
of it. If I were writing an opinion, I'd need to describe what I was trying to,
I understand, but it could be anything, Your Honor. The answer is it could be anything, because if the Supreme Court of the United States has conclusively determined that virtual images are protected under the First Amendment, that's the end of the case as far as the issue that you're presenting, with all respect, raises.
It's a different issue. So it's always becoming for an officer to possess constitutionally protected materials.
There is nothing in the statute that forces or that calls upon the accused at any time to show that his or her conduct was becoming. The burden, the verb is, or the adjective is, unbecoming.
I'm not asking about the burden of proof. I'm asking how you would
frame the
argument.
The question in a way that implies that on some level I have to come up, or my client has to come up, with an example, and with respect, I submit that I do not have to for him.
Okay. Well, I guess we misapprehend our roles here today. I'm trying to decide how we might shape an opinion that might shape the law, not trying to try the case. Okay, thank you.
Counsel, you're not suggesting, are you, that a trier of fact could not convict an officer under Article 133 for possession of virtual child pornography, are you?
A panel could. That's not. I hope I'm connecting with
yeah.
you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Yes. Could a panel do so? Yes. Can this conviction be sustained on the basis of what could have happened? The answer is no, because my client was entitled to a trial, and the trial had to be conducted in a way that comported with the applicable law. And in this respect, we think it did not do so.
Count.
Go ahead.
In the record, at any point, is the definition identified as a criminal offense to the members? That is, there are references to Title 18 of the United States Code, which, as lawyers we know, is a compilation of criminal statute. But were the members told, in this case, either by the judge or by the parties in argument, that the definition that was being supplied was a definition of a crime?
Your Honor, you've raised the question that I don't have an answer
okay.
to off the
well,
top of my
assuming,
head.
Assuming that it wasn't, where is the deficiency here? That is, if the members were instructed that this is a definition of child pornography, and that's how they proceeded to consider the case. Where is the deficiency at trial? I understand the argument that if they were told that this was a crime, then there would be a question of whether they were properly instructed with respect to, and your time's going to run out, but I'm going to continue my question. You'll have an opportunity to answer it. I can understand the argument that if they were told it was a crime, then there's a question whether they're properly instructed in light of the later decision by the Supreme Court. But if they weren't told it was a crime, they were just told this is child pornography, why is that different from any other definition that might be imported into a judge's instructions to help the members understand what it is that they're considering?
I think I followed the question. Because packed into the definition is a constitutional time bomb. There is a, even if you never mentioned that it was Title 18, even if you were not going to indulge the presumption that everyone is on notice of federal law, you would still have I'll call it a time bomb, that sort of goes off because of the Free Speech Coalition.
But pornography is not illegal.
I beg your pardon?
Pornography is not illegal, per se. That is, if we were dealing with adult pornography here, and the charge was that he had downloaded on the computer on board the ship adult pornography, and a definition was given of adult pornography, would we have the same problem?
Well, obviously you wouldn't have the Free Speech Coalition case. You wouldn't have a constitutional flaw built into the spec, and that's what happened here.
Now, but there's only a constitutional flaw, is there not, if the members are told that it's a crime?
No, I don't agree with that, Your Honor. I understand your point, but it's one I don't embrace.
Is the issue for you that he did not get a chance to defend on the basis of constitutionally protected activity? Is this a case of, is the real offense here to you, the opportunity to defend?
Yeah, that's the gravamen, that he had an opportunity, he should have been afforded an opportunity to speak to the jury in terms of the unconstitutionality of a key element of the specification. This is the government's choice to launch the case on this basis. And that can't be saved on appeal. It can't be saved by coming up with a theory. The Navy Court's first theory was, well, as an attempt. They wisely abandoned that when they got the case back a second time. It can't be saved on a theory that, well, it was all, you know, gee whiz, you know, it's a bare 133. It's too late to do that. And as our briefs indicate, I'll finish unless the court has other questions.
You're responding to a question. You may take the time you need to respond to the question.
My question has been responded to. Thank you. Then, counsel.
If I could just finish the sentence.
You can finish the sentence, and I believe Judge Stuckey has a question for you.
And this is having wrestled with trying to figure out what was going on here. It seems to me that the problem was that the Navy Court indulged the presumption that it could effectively direct a verdict, that there was nothing to have a conversation about. As to wrongfulness, that's wrong under the very instructions that the military judge gave, that I quoted before, and also with respect to whether this was conduct unbecoming. There was at least something to have a conversation about, and the Navy Court could not put Lieutenant J.J. Forney's lights out on appeal as if it was directing a verdict. That's effectively what's happened here.
Okay. You'll have an opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Efron, may it please the court, I'm Lieutenant Elliot Oxman, along with Colonel Louis Puglio, on behalf of the government. This court should affirm appellant's conviction because he was properly convicted under Article 133, a specifically military statute and not under 2252 of the CPPA. Appellant's argument that forms the basis of the question before this court today is one which ignores the record of trial. Appellant knew full well that the Article 133 charge was not based on 2256. And it's in the record on page 20, crystal clear. Appellant knew this before sentencing, before the findings, and before a single member was seated for voir dire.
Are you referring to page 20 of the joint appendix or page 20 of the record of trial?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It's actually from the record, and with the court's permission, I'd like to supplement the joint appendix.
What does it say? What does page 20 say? Since we don't have it.
It's a colloquy between the military judge and the appellant's defense counsel. This is before, you know, it's a 39A section before the members have even been brought in. Starting from the bottom of the page on 20, this is the defense counsel speaking. My understanding of Article 133, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Your Honor, is that as long as they prove there was an act and that that act was of a nature unbecoming an officer or gentleman, they prove their case. Here, what they're saying is 2256, if the image falls within, you know, child pornography, then the military judge says the definition, and the defense counsel responds, prescribed there. They're not arguing under the 2252A, the elements where you need three or more. Next page on 21, military judge, right. So they're not saying that you violated 2252 alpha, which constitutes conduct kind of becoming in the original charge. Am I correct in that, defense counsel? As to the Article 133, military judge, yes. Defense counsel, they're saying he possessed child pornography. The receipt and possession, defense counsel, right, on board the ship, military judge.
Counsel, with respect, I'm not sure that's what the defense is arguing in this case. That is, I don't believe the defense is arguing that the members thought that, or the judge thought, that he was being prosecuted under 2252A, but rather the defense argument, as I understand it, and I'm not adopting it, I'm just trying to understand it, is that the members were given the impression, by virtue of this definition, that the act was a violation of a criminal statute, a statute later which had problems by a decision of the United States Supreme Court.
Your Honor, first, I actually am familiar with the record, having read it, and to answer your question that you asked earlier, the answer is no. It's not referred to as a criminal statute in the record, at least as far as I can tell from my recollection of reading the record. It's referred to simply as under Title 18. It's not
referred to. What's Title 18?
Pardon?
What's Title 18?
Well, we know that it's a criminal statute, but it's not referred to that to the members. And I believe, unless I'm remembering it wrong, that was the question you asked.
Yeah, and they'll be subject to the arguments of party and consideration of the court as to what the significance of that is. But again, as I understand the core of the defense argument in this case, it's not that the members thought he was being prosecuted under the specific requirements of 2252A. It's that a criminal statute was brought before the members, leaving the members, in the defense view, with the impression that there was a criminal violation here, thereby raising the danger that they would convict him on the grounds that there was otherwise criminal conduct, as opposed to considering the pure Article 133 offense.
Your Honor, I'm not sure I follow.
In our other cases under Article 134, we have expressed concern that where the statute has been referenced in the underlying Title 18 statute has been referenced, that the members would be convicting the individual because they thought he had committed a federal crime, federal civilian crime, not because he was convicted of the committed the Article 134 service discrediting or prejudicial conduct. Here, the defense is making a similar argument. That is, that by referencing the Title 18 statute, it raised the risk that the members would convict him because he committed a civilian crime under Title 18, not because of the pure Article 133 conduct on becoming an officer. And in light of the Supreme Court's decision that it is not a civilian crime to have virtual child pornography, that he didn't have the opportunity to raise that to the members.
Your Honor, thank you for clarifying. And I think now I understand your point. The response would be that 2256, which was referenced in the charge, was superfluous. And going to the record in this case, if we look at how this case was prosecuted, the emphasis was on where this happened, how it happened, and what happened. It was not about violating the federal statute. The evidence put forward was that it was on a U.S. naval vessel, on a government computer, that members were given the images of little girls being exploited sexually and discovered by an enlisted member of the crew. That was the evidence that the members were given. There was not a discussion about violating a federal statute, Your Honor. And I do understand the court's concern, but in this case, that wasn't what happened.
Yeah, not necessarily the court's concern. I was simply trying to get you to join where the defense was in this.
Counsel, what do you make of the fact that the other specifications in the charge sheet were charged as violations of Article 134, Clause 3, or in other words, as violations of 18 U.S.C. 2252 alpha? One of them references in both the violation of 2252 alpha and the same definition as was used in the Article 133 offense.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the 134 Clause 3 offense, it brings in, it's the assimilated statute, brings it in. And is your question, would this lead to confusion or?
As I understand it, your response to Chief Judge Efron's question was that, you know, that this was not tried as a violation of a federal statute case. It was tried as basically, what did he have and when did he have it?
Yes, sir.
And what my question to you is if you look at the charge sheet, well, understandably, they're charged as violations of Article 134. They all reference violations of the federal statute. They're charged as Clause 3 offenses.
Yes, sir.
So how can you possibly stand here and say that it wasn't charged as violations of federal statutes?
Because there's a distinction between Article 134, Clause 3, Your Honor, and a 133 offense. The distinction being that under 133, there's only two elements to prove. That there was conduct and that it was unbecoming. Under Article 134, you have to prove that statute is violated. You don't have to prove that under Article 133.
But this all this evidence happened in the same court martial, right?
Yes, sir.
And they were instructed on the violation of the federal statute, right, for the Article 134 offenses?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
In theory, all the pictures in question could be virtual. Is that correct?
Only in theory, yes.
Well, in theory, we're debating the law aspect of this. There's no proof in there that these were actual pictures.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the appellant's confession, his two confessions, offer significant proof that they were real pictures because...
Let me restate it. Did the government prove at the trial that these were actual pictures?
Your Honor, the government did not try to prove they were actual pictures at trial.
So in theory, they could be virtual.
In theory.
Okay. And in theory, could the possession of virtual pictures be constitutionally protected?
Not for Article 133 offense, Your Honor.
So possession of any virtual picture is conduct unbecoming?
No, Your Honor. And the distinction is this. Article 133, as you know, has two elements. The first one would be your question, any picture. That's the conduct, possession of that picture. It's that second element, the narrowing aspect of Article 133, which we focus on. If your virtual picture was not lewd and lascivious, for example, it's not going to meet that narrowing element. It's not going to be found unbecoming. So, no, any picture would not fall under Article 133. It has to be found unbecoming by a finder of fact, in this case, the members.
Would it be a defense, not necessarily an effective one in any given case, but would it be a defense that the conduct is not unbecoming because it's conduct that civilians are permitted to engage in?
No, Your Honor. In fact...
That's not a possible defense? I didn't say you'd have to win with it.
Your Honor, the government is not aware of any case law or statute that requires an instruction that conduct may be constitutionally protected that's being prosecuted under Article 133.
He's not talking
about an instruction, but a defense.
So you're saying, in theory, could you raise that as a defense, Your Honor?
That's my question.
I mean,
in theory, you could raise anything as a defense, so I'm not asking you a completely abstract question, right? But it's the flip side of, is all child pornography the equivalent of unbecoming? And what I'm trying to ask you is there a delta here at all?
The government does not believe that any child pornography would be...
Even if constitutionally protected?
For purposes of Article 133, Your Honor, I believe that there's no tolerance for child pornography in the military, especially for an officer.
What court has held that?
Pardon?
How does that comport with our decisions under Article 134, where we've treated that as a case-specific determination as to whether it's service discrediting or prejudicial to good order and discipline?
Well, Your Honor, Article 133, as you know, is specifically for officers in the military. There's no case yet that's dealt specifically in Article 133. The government argued that officers are held to a higher standard, and for that reason, there can't be any tolerance. But if it was case specific, I think arguably in this case, beyond a reasonable doubt, no images that were provided to the members as evidence would be found permissible.
Let's take adult pornography, and without describing it in the courtroom, can an officer be charged with possession of downloading or possession of adult pornography in the circumstances of the case that we have here now under Article 133?
I believe yes, sir.
And can the officer offer a defense in that case that the pornography that's been accessed is widely available to civilian adults in the United States, and there's no reason in that officer's argument to the members that a military officer should be treated differently? And if the officer makes that argument, whose responsibility is it to decide whether or not it is conduct unbecoming? Is it this court's responsibility, or is it the responsibility of the fact finder at trial?
The finder of fact is the narrowing element. The members or the military judge, it's judge alone, has to make that determination.
Then what's different between constitutionally protected adult pornography in civilian society and constitutionally protected child pornography in civilian society with respect to the ability of an accused to make an argument to the panel that the panel should be the one to decide whether or not that is conduct unbecoming an officer?
Your Honor, the fact that it's constitutionally protected, or that it may be constitutionally protected in civilian society, doesn't matter under Article 133.
Well, counsel, I don't think that's right. I mean, I think that you can, that once something is deemed constitutionally protected, it still may be a criminal offense under Article 133, but I think you're wrong to suggest that it makes no difference at all. I don't think you're going to find a case from this court in the Article 133 or Article 134 context that says that.
Your Honor, the government is not aware of any case involving under Article 133 where the defense for child pornography, where the defense argues that because it's constitutionally protected in the civilian world, that it should be fine in the military. That under Article 133, conduct that's prescribed conduct that might be protected in the civilian world can be prescribed in the military. So I guess I don't follow what you're saying, Your Honor.
But it's the next piece of that, which is it can be prescribed. And the question is it necessarily prescribed? It's back to the delta issue, which is people are dancing around with.
So you say, is it prescribed? Child pornography.
No, must it always, in every case? Is there a per se rule that this court should come out with that says, in every instance, virtual child pornography is conduct unbecoming an officer, and we'll decide that, and the trier of fact may not. As a matter of law, we will rule that it is.
I think that the narrowing element for Article 133 goes to finder of fact, whether something is unbecoming, and we look at the conduct. So I'm not sure that a per se rule would be necessary. And Your Honor, the reason I don't know that a per se rule would be the best route is you get into the problem of...
We can't do that?
Well, that would be one problem. But it also goes to... I view it as analogous to an obscenity charge in the civilian world, in that you can't just say something is obscene and that's the end of the case. You have to have, it has to offend community standards. In that case, the community is the jury. And that narrowing element, the jury's decision whether or not it offends community standards, that's very analogous to Article 133, in that you have conduct, or in some cases, failure to act, and the members decide whether it's unbecoming or not. That I think that's what saves Article 133. It's the same, it's analogous to an obscenity case.
And I think that what appellant's argument is that if they had the opportunity to make the argument that this conduct was constitutionally or arguably constitutionally protected, that the members may or may not have agreed with them that because of that it was not conduct unbecoming. Do you understand the argument?
I understand the point.
And I'm not saying that they would have found that or that it's necessarily true. I'm just saying that they could have made the argument and that they could have found that.
But Your Honor, Article 133 doesn't care if it's constitutionally protected or not. That is what Parker v. Levy tells us. So that argument wouldn't happen in Article 133.
Counsel, my understanding of the defense argument is that they're not challenging Article 133, nor are they challenging the application of Article 133 to child pornography. What they're challenging is, did, in this case, the defendant have the opportunity to argue to the members as to whether this conduct was or was not service discrediting by pointing out whether or not it was a criminal offense in civilian society. Now, if the government wishes to make it a per se offense to have adult pornography or child pornography, they've got Article 92. And without deciding here today, there are a whole raft of activities in civilian life which are prescribed by orders and are punished under Article 92. And the question never arises in those cases whether it's service discrediting, prejudicial to good order or discipline, or conduct unbecoming an officer. All the panel has to decide is, did or did not the conduct occur? But the government has chosen, in this case, to prosecute under Article 133, not under Article 92. I'm not aware of any rule that was brought into issue in this case. So isn't the government then under a position where the question is, did the members have all the information that they needed to decide whether or not it was conduct unbecoming an officer? And did they have information as to whether it was or was not a criminal offense in civilian society?
You know, the government's position is that information under an Article 133 charge does not come in. That there's no instruction for it, there's no rule that you can make that argument.
Oh, so that if the judge had precluded the defense from making the argument that this isn't an offense in civilian society, that would have been a proper ruling by the judge? Is that what you're asking us to hold in this case?
No, Your Honor, I think that would be a little extreme. The point that I'm trying to make, Your Honor, is that for the Article 133 in this case, with these facts, what mattered was proving the conduct and then letting the members decide if it was unbecoming or not. And appellant's decision in this case, under these facts, in this case, was to deny the possession and receipt of the child pornography. So when you're posing hypotheticals at me about whether or not it's constitutional and whether they should be able to make that argument, That's not the facts in this case. That was not their defense. They were never saying, these horrendous images of children, little girls being sexually exploited, they might be constitutionally protected, so therefore consider that when we're deciding if it's unbecoming or not. The appellant in this case was arguing he never possessed these images,
But can you say that if he'd had that, that they didn't have the benefit of Ashcroft at the time of trial?
Well, Your Honor, I think.
I mean,
I'm sorry, go ahead, Your Honor.
No, that's fine.
I think beyond any doubt, any question whatsoever, arguing that these images were constitutionally protected as the defense, as opposed to he didn't possess them, I think that there's approximately 0% chance that would have ever happened in this case. Based on this evidence in this case, I think this court can know that beyond a reasonable doubt.
Oh. Counsel, though your time has expired, we did have an extended questioning of the defense, and if you have would like to briefly summarize any other arguments you would like to make and then summarize your argument, you may do so now.
You know, I would say the two key points in this case, it was charged properly as an Article 133 offense, not under Article 134, Clause 3. And appellant knew that from the very beginning. He knew this was not about the federal statute. And they made the choice to argue this case about possession. And to go back now and say that they really would have argued the constitutionality of it is revisionist history. And they've accused the government or the court of trying to reshape this case. They're trying to re-argue their case as well, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
The case is now submitted, and the court will stand in recess until next Tuesday at 9:30, when we will convene at the Washburn University School of Law in Topeka, Kansas.
All rise. The court stands adjourned until further order of the court.